Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. This is Greg Masters, your host, sound engineer, and problem figure outer today. I'm trying to get Dr. Jan Sidorov on the line. We're having a little issue with Skype. Please call in. Okay, let's see. Okay, Yanni there?
Here I am.
Okay. first off, thank you for joining me on very short notice. We have a very timely update today in shall we say, accountable care, as measured by all of the recent activity around the political, shall we say, theater in Washington, which, if it hadn't preempted the drama around the rollout of the exchanges, Ted Cruz may have actually given the Obama administration, including Secretary Sebelius, a whole lot of cover, because there's a lot going on in terms of implementation of health reform, particularly on the exchange level. And I'm on your blog, and I just heard the Aetna Talks Exchanges piece that Mark Bertolini gave to CNBC. So let's just reroute the conversation since we're getting a late start. This is Greg Masters, and you're listening to This Week in Health Innovation. And my guest today, last-minute guest, who we connected on Twitter, and I'm very grateful for that, is Dr. Jan Sidorov. And let me tell you about Dr. Jan Sidorov. Dr. Jan Sidorov has the web persona. Now, this is from his blog. He has the web persona of a blog vacateur with a wide range of knowledge about the medical home, disease management, population-based healthcare, and managed care that is only exceeded by his modesty. He has been quoted by the Wall Street Journal, Consumer Reports, and NPR's All Things Considered. He has over 20 years' experience in primary care, disease management, and population-based care coordination. He's a primary care general internist and former medical director at Geisinger Health Plan. He's a widely sought-after speaker, and we're fortunate to have him here today. He's a PA, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania-based, and he's active in social media and publishes the popular blog, Disease Care Management Blog, so check it out on the web. So with that as a quick overview, Jan, the last time you and I spoke, I had the benefit of listening to it just yesterday. We spoke in 2011, and it's amazing the clarity that you had as to what we could look forward to as many of those bumps in the road have actually been witnessed. So let's start today. What are you seeing?
Great.
And what do you make of what's going on right now? Talk about it.
You mean in Washington and all the political theater that's going on?
Well, let's just absolutely. I mean, from your perch, start with the exchanges. What are you seeing? Let's maybe get rooted in health reform implementation and And what does this all say? I mean, those of us who are trying to do something here to be proactive instead of obstructionist, you know, what should we make of – let's just talk about the latest, the failure for the smooth rollout of these exchanges, particularly at least the federal version.
Well, you know, I was a medical director in a relatively small, mono-state, not-for-profit health plan with just over 200,000 enrollees. That was in our neighborhood. It was in our, you know, I forget how many counties that we're in, but, you know, it's whether it was 19 or 25, I don't frankly recall. But I remember how notoriously difficult it was, and even though that wasn't part of my portfolio, but I remember rubbing elbows with administrators and experts whose job it was to get the enrollee information in, adjudicate all the things that you need to collect to verify their insurability, to verify their age, their employer status, you know, who their physician was, you know, all those details for a tiny little plan located in central Pennsylvania was something that was not an easy thing to do. And as you can imagine, if you're insuring, you know, a 50-person or 100-person employer, and they're hiring and firing and people are leaving and, you know, folks are shuttling in and out, babies are being born, folks are getting married, people are coming in and off of the insurance rolls, that is a full-time job, you know, for a health plan to stay on top of that. You want to know who you are insuring, and you want to know who you are not insuring. And anybody in the commercial insurance industry who knows anything about insurance would have been able to figure out months ago that what the feds were doing on the exchanges sure sounded great in principle, you know, that it was going to be the Expedia of health insurance. You could log on, you could scroll through all these options and then pick the best plan for you. It was never going to be that simple. It wasn't simple for the tiny little plan that I was in. It was not simple for Aetna, and it wasn't going to be simple for the feds. And I'm surprised that they kept that, you know, Ms. Sebelius kept saying that everything was on track when, you know, just based on my own intuition, I would have been very surprised if this had gone well.
So let me ask you this. I believe Pennsylvania is considered, for the most part, a, quote, blue state, but if I recall correctly, there's a Republican governor in there, and last I recall is there was some question as to whether Pennsylvania was going to let the feds do it or create their own exchange, or are you dialed into the Pennsylvania drama? Is there any unique strain there?
Yes, you know, we are truly, I think of ourselves as truly a purple state. I mean, we have Senator Toomey, you know, who's no shrinking violet when it comes to Republican issues. And then we have Senator Casey, who is as blue as they get in terms of, you know, supporting cherished Democratic causes. Outside his faith leading him to vote one way when it comes to pro-choice issues. So we have Toomey and we have Casey. Right now, the Republicans are in charge of both chambers in our assembly, the Senate and the House. And we have a governor, and we have a Republican governor, and the Republican governor chose not to have a state-run exchange, but to rely on the feds. And I can tell you that personally, as a small business owner who has to buy my own insurance, I've tried to get on those exchanges because that's what I was promised, and I haven't had any luck.
And of course, some of these news outlets, CNN as an example, had a reporter, one of their health desk reporters assigned to that beat, and I got, I think over a two-week period, calling it all hours of the day and early morning. She was trying to get on and still hadn't gotten on, and then eventually got on, and I don't know that she was able to actually transact her application. So obviously it's a mess. And second only perhaps to the sacred cow of defense, one would think the IT subcontractor world in the Beltway Bandit crop do pretty well at procuring large federal contracts for large IT projects, and healthcare has to be a giant consumer inside that circle. And I'm just, I tweeted the other day, I said, you know what, I've been an advocate and an explainer and a defender of the Affordable Care Act from its pre-launch, pre-legislative days of being vetted in the Senate Finance Committee. And I've been in this position as an uncompensated, just citizen, Greg Citizen, who's been defending this complex act, flawed as it is. Hey, let's make it work. And you know what? This healthcare.gov thing threw me over the top. It's indefensible. And the fact that the IT people get fat and happy around these huge contracts and they couldn't figure it out, I'm just, I don't know, I'm a little demoralized myself.
Well, the good news, Greg, is that for bloggers like you and me, this is mother's milk. I'm optimistic that eventually the kinks will get worked out. But I think the broader message here is I think what the lesson from the exchanges is that running an insurance plan or running insurance plans in the commercial setting is not like Medicare so much, where the claims come in and you pay them, the feds are in control. But when you have all these moving pieces and all the things that commercial insurers need to do to guarantee insurability, the complexity is logarithmic, and there really is something of a gap between lofty campaign promises and hard bureaucratic reality. Getting from here to there is still going to be a very, very, very bumpy road.
Oh, that's very well said, and all the more reason why I'm so passionate when these ideological sound bites, which dumb down a very complex ecosystem to a set of talking points more often than not that are off base, it just gets my cackles up. So, yes, you're right. As bloggers, we have a lot to write about. So, in an earlier show this morning, I talked to my colleague, co-founder over at Health Innovation Media, Dr. Pat Salver, colleague of yours in the fellow internist and ED physician at Kaiser for many years, went into medical administration at a number of plans. So similar pathways to you. And we were talking about her evolution and interest as a physician from clinical to medical administrative to social media to digital health adaptation technologies and all this stuff. And we kind of came to, well, what's the significance of all this stuff from the point of view of an accountable care organization or the goals of the Affordable Care Act vis-a-vis accountable care? So, how can anyone argue with accountable care? I mean, who can actually argue in favor of unaccountable care? So the conclusion we kind of came to was that the elements or the indicia of what constitutes an accountable entity is something like a Geisinger or a Kaiser, or where you have an integrated delivery system that is both the health plan and the delivery system, and there's an alignment between the respective wobbly parts of the stool outside of integrated delivery systems. So I'm curious about where you're at in your thought process and everything that you've seen unfolding as to, is that the correct conclusion, or is the Geisinger model, the integrated delivery system, the bundled program like Proven Care, is that where we're going, or have you in any way changed in your view?
I'm less sanguine about that, and the reason I am is because the Kaisers and the Geisingers of this world have a footprint in our nation's healthcare delivery system of less than 1%, I think, if you look at all the covered lives out there. And it's not like we can put institutions like Kaiser into a replicator machine and drop them into downtown LA, or put them into Alabama or all the other states that they should be in, so the question is, how do we take independent private practices or smaller physician-owned practices or large physician practices, many of whom are in these alliances with different hospitals, and work up these virtual arrangements that get them as close to being as Geisinger as possible. And that's what accountable care organizations are all alike. Unfortunately, in my eye, there are some issues pertaining to central command and control that Geisingers and Kaisers have, not the least of which has to do with in-house management of insurance risk. They have their own separate insurance companies, and they have the in-house intellectual capital to understand the basic fundamentals of risk transfer that isn't resident in, hospitals that are affiliated with physician groups and these virtual contractual relationships where that kind of critical mass when it comes to understanding insurance risk and managing that really is resident in being able to enable these organizations to do the necessary stuff to increase quality and to do so without breaking the bank.
So let me make sure I understand here. It's more about this logarithmic complexity than it is, well, this is not necessarily the model that needs to be migrated throughout the country in a, it's a good model. It just isn't apparently self-replicating out there because you just don't, it isn't a top-down thing of dropping it in Des Moines, Iowa and having it prosper and grow out. Is that what you're saying?
Right. I mean, if the market, and there's still something of a healthcare market out there. If the value proposition was so compelling, then doctors and hospitals and the counties that they serve would have coalesced into these Geisinger organizations years ago, and they haven't. And the question is, why haven't they? That's one question. But the other question is, does an ACO get you to where you need to be to execute on that Geisinger model? And I have my doubts about that. Now, so the question is, well, Jan, and you've pointed this out to me, well, Jan, what do you want to do then? If you're gonna be dumping all over the ACO model and its questionable ability to deal with, reconciling insurance risk with costs and quality, then what do you want to do? And I would point out that while Geisinger had was a very, very strong template for accountable care organizations, it also was a very, very strong template for another model of care, and that is the regional not-for-profit health plan, that contract that called Geisinger Health Plan, that and Kaiser has the same kind of model, that contracts with both the organization, but also contracts with outside physicians that are unaffiliated with the organization. So when I was at Geisinger, we contracted with both Geisinger physicians as well as non-Geisinger physicians. We knew the neighborhood. We knew what insurance risk was all about. We knew, you know, we kind of knew who were the good doctors and the bad doctors. We practiced enlightened utilization management, you know. And thanks to all of that stuff, I think we took good care of our patients, and we did so without, you know, ruinous costs and without, you know, having CEOs who had, you know, private jets and offices festooned with real thick carpets and, you know, pricey paintings on the wall.
Yes, the nonprofit community-based HMO. Do any of them ever still exist these days? Yes, that's a good part of the DNA of the culture that works. Let me throw a few things out at you as potential end run. Let's just arguably assume the integrated delivery system model, complexity notwithstanding, is probably the direction that we want to go in, because the other argument for that is, hey, vertical integration, too big to sail, too expensive in terms of pricing leverage to that doesn't work in the Affordable Care Act way. But is direct practice, is that an end run around an IDN or an ACO model, or do you see it as adding something to the transformation?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I'm a believer in letting a thousand flowers bloom. You know, I think there's merit to the direct practice model. I think there's merit to, you know, employer-based networks with or without, you know, an insurance company that is, you know, either in a TPA arrangement or running their network or being more closely aligned. I think integrated delivery networks work. I think small regional health plans work. I think in some areas virtual arrangements that are ACO-like will work. The question, you know, what works in Minnesota seems to be working very well. We have a problem in downtown LA, you know, thanks to poverty, the pernicious effects of poverty and racism that's going on. You know, so the question is, what works locally? What works culturally? What's the best fit, you know, regarding, you know, the boots on the ground? Which leads me, you know, to wonder whether or not, you know, the tent that currently comprises Obamacare is sufficiently inclusive enough in being able to accommodate, you know, all these different variations out there. The health insurance exchanges would say that they're not. You know, the question is politically, you know, whether or not whether the exchanges are characteristic of what's going on, or whether or not Obamacare can really pull things out and make it work, you know, given cultural and local variations.
So in the thousand flower bloom metaphor, and particularly since you've written, called some attention to Michael Millington's piece on, you know, still demanding excellence 15 years later, the whole quality thing, that's out there. How does maybe a direct practice model, which is less constrained by maybe standards and protocols, how does that fit in with uniformity and the promotion of quality agenda?
Well, let me dial down and then step back a little bit. When you dial down to a specific clinical problem, like for example diabetes, you know, national guidelines say that there should be a certain level of diabetes control. You know, you should have an A1C, which is a metric of overall blood sugar control. You should have an A1C, like, of 7. But the thing is, though, that not all patients want to have an A1C of 7. There are some patients that are really believers in tight blood sugar control, and then there are other patients, particularly elders, who, you know, are saying, Doc, you know, I don't want to take all these pills, and so what if my A1C is 7.3 or 7.5? I mean, that's a real conversation. So from a top-down approach, everyone should have an A1C of 7, where in the real world, in the real world of clinical practice, you know, the range of acceptable blood sugar control can run from 6.7 to 7.3. So already, even one-on-one with my patients, there's a certain amount of inherent variation that is both value-based, cultural, you know, negotiated, and everything else. And that's part of, you know, my DNA, and that's part of the pedigree of the healthcare system, so that when you start rolling that kind of perspective up into clinical guidelines, how clinics should be run, how do you set healthcare policy, a certain amount of practice variation is inevitable, I think. You know, that and once again, you know, when it comes to, you know, the ascertainment of quality, what works for a Latino population in the border towns of Texas isn't necessarily a template or a model for what you want to do in Minnesota or northern New York or the suburbs of Philadelphia or down in Alabama, where there's different disease burdens, different perspectives, different delivery systems involving different doctors with different practice styles. And, you know, ultimately, it'd be nice if there were some uniformity out there, but I think I'm a believer in the thousand flowers metaphor is a vision for healthcare that is more inclusive, more flexible, and more organic and more adaptive.
Well said, and I hate to say that we're a minute out from our live broadcast.
Where did the time go?
Where did the time go? So much to talk about. May I extend an invitation to reschedule with you, because we really didn't get an opportunity to drill into the ACO market the way I would like to. Is that a possibility?
That'd be great. And you know, this was so last minute that thanks to this conversation, I'm going to reformulate my thoughts a little bit more. So I hope that you and the thousands of listeners on this phone call get a more coherent picture of what it is that I'm trying to communicate here.
Well, there you have it. We're going to reschedule Dr. Jan Sidoroff on This Week in Accountable Care. Thank you for being agile today and coming in at the last moment. My apologies for the technical glitches. You've been listening to This Week in Accountable Care. I'm your host, Rick Nasker. So we'll do this next week. Please join us then, 12 noon Pacific time. Greg Nasser saying bye now. Thanks, Jan.
Bye.